I was in complete shock looking at it, at her. Her dance had this facial expression always filled with guilt, and now I knew the truth. I could see it. The creature was exactly how Ian had described, except with wavy ginger hair and a sadness in its beady eyes. This abomination was Lila. This was how Prudence had brought her back. And this is the only way I would ever see Jamie again. A risk that I wasn't going to take. After days of disbelief, the reality finally hit me like a ton of bricks. Jamie was dead, and he wasn't coming back. "Why did you do this?" I asked her, my voice shaking with horror. Prudence scowled at me, trying to mask her shame. "I didn't want this, and if you think this was my aim, then you're sicker than I am. I just wanted my granddaughter back." When she died, a part of me died. My son blamed me. His wife blamed me. Although he never said it, I could see it in Bernie's eyes too, that he did as well. I had pushed for her to stay. I wanted to spend more time with her. I got cocky about my ability to cope with the strange occurrences in the flats. I know what you must be thinking. But I swear, I didn't know about the sleepwalking until it was too late. We had moved into the flat not too long after my son left home to move in with his girlfriend. He's the youngest of three and was the last to fly the nest, so he downsized for the two of us. He never knew what we were facing in that flat, or the dangers that he sent his little girl into. When it happened, it was a few years after the fire, and the troubles of the creatures. We'd struck the deal with the things in the lift, and the neighbors of the burned flats had just become fixture, just like the other quirks. I genuinely thought she would be safe. Prudence paused to gaze longingly at the mutated little girl in the cage. The creature just twitched. In return, it bears its four rows of teeth and made a gentle hiss. "How did you do this?" I stopped her with more urgency this time, looking at Rat Lila in disbelief. I had to get the answers out of her fast. I didn't want to spend any more time than absolutely necessary in the shed. The gardener helped me," she answered with her voice trembling. "Who the fuck is the gardener?" I grew more impatient with every new confusion she threw at me. The last thing I needed was something new and potentially malevolent in the mix. I didn't mention him in my note because he's been gone for over 20 years. He'll be of no concern to you, so don't worry, his damage is in the past now. Around the time that Lila went missing, the council granted planning permission for the tower block next door. But before that was built, the land that it sits on acted as a communal garden for owls and a neighboring tower block on the other side. It had a regular gardener named Derek, who you would often see tending the flower beds out front. Derek was one of the first people I'd met when I first moved in. And like I said, I had to work it out all myself. The first time the window cleaner came to my balcony, I naturally let him in and offered him a cup of tea. And as my hand applied pressure to the handle to open the balcony door, there was a knock at the front door. I made a gesture to the cleaner to indicate that I'd only be a minute and answered. And there he was, Derek. He stopped me and told me not to let the man in, and I would be making a huge mistake. I thought he sounded crazy, and I told him so. After a while of arguing, I got up to reboil the kettle and let the man in, and Derek grabbed my hands and shouted at me to look at the man outside. But when I turned to look, there was no man outside, but a monster. He was tall and impossibly thin, flesh and bones, but somehow thinner than bones with graying skin stretched over them. He had eyes that seemed to be so deep that they went on forever. Like the blackest cave that you could imagine. Saliva dripped from his mouth and landed on my balcony floor, some sliding down the glass panel of the door. I opened my mouth to scream, but as I did, Derek let go of my hands and the monster was gone. In its place was that smug, friendly man, begging for a drink while he cleans the windows. It took me a minute to process it, but I know what I'd seen. That was the real window cleaner. I never intentionally or tried to open a door for him ever again. And that day, Derek didn't stay long. He didn't tell me what the window cleaner is or why he visits every few days. He didn't explain anything about the weird things that go on. As much as Derek was a part of the strange happenings, he was like one that had been carved from light. He said that he'd always be around when he needed him, and that it was his job to look after the residents, just like the flower beds. Over the years, he appeared a few times. He was instrumental in striking a deal with the creatures. When the neighbors died in a fire, he created a special display for them in the garden, and made sure that nothing planted was poisonous to the cats as soon as they arrived. He also stopped an imposter from killing Bernie at our front door. He seemed like such a good thing for the residents, always there to help, offer some gentle advice or a creative solution, someone to be trusted. He changed when they granted planning permission for the other block, though. He knew his garden would be dug up to lay foundations and his use was reluctant. He became grumpy and bitter over time when no one paid enough attention to notice, especially not when my tragedy struck. When Lila died, I was devastated. Derek appeared to me as I sat on the bench in the garden crying. He offered to help me, to use the garden to get her back. But I snapped at him and I told him it was his fault, and that he should have been there when it happened to stop them. He worked so hard on the agreement with the creatures. He spent a lot of time with them. Lila broke the rule, and he had to allow them to do what had been agreed. He said he couldn't have stopped them, but he wanted to help make things right. I understood why he hadn't intervened, but I couldn't accept it. I lashed out at him. I'm embarrassed to say that I actually slapped the poor man along with his stamping on his freshly planted flower bed. I was angry and grieving. I quickly burnt myself out and collapsed into a blubbering heap on the floor. Derek attempted to comfort me, but his mind was on his garden. He said he was sorry for my loss, but I shouldn't have sacked the flower bed, that he'd always been nice to me and that I should be kinder in return. I snapped and told him that it didn't matter because it was all about to be Boodles the next few days anyways. I should have taken more of a note of the way he twitched as I said that. He snapped. Said that he knew I was angry, but there's no need to take it out on him. If I was that desperate to get Lila back, he knew a way, but it was dangerous. I begged him. Anything, I said, I would do anything. He told me it was simple, and that all I had to do was enter the lift and offer the creature some food, whilst repeating the phrase, revert mortuus, during the frenzied hours. He said that there was no guarantee that they wouldn't be crunching my bones before I even got the first word out, but that if I succeeded, I would have Lila back. And of course, it was successful. There wasn't a creature in sight as I performed the ritual as instructed. I thought nothing happened at first. She didn't appear right away. But a few days later, I found her running inside of my house. She had taken a chunk out of Damon's ear with her teeth. But just as I was about to finalize it, I saw in her eyes who she was. I tried to look out for Derek, but by that point, the workmen had started. Nothing was left of his garden, and nothing was left of Derek. No one's seen him since. You see, Kat, nothing in that building is totally harmless. You have to be on your guard at all times. I've kept it like this ever since. You may think I'm crazy, but I couldn't kill my own granddaughter. I'm not a monster. Prue sighed and ushered me back out of the shed. She locked the door behind us, closing the paddock on her most hideous secret. I was exhausted. It was a lot of information to take in, and as a result of the information I'd received, real grief my boyfriend was finally settling in. Every hope I had was dashed, and I know many of you tried to tell me in the comments that he was gone, but I wanted you all to be wrong so bad. I couldn't bear to look at Prudence Hemmings for another moment, so I made my excuses and I left, morosely riding the bus back to the tower block I had once been so excited to live in. It was mid-afternoon by the time I got home. The choice between the stairs and the lift didn't strike much enthusiasm into me, but I opted for the stairs. After what I'm sure ended up being 11 flights, I made it the 6 flights up the stairs to my flat. I laid on a mattress on the floor and sobbed for Jamie. I sobbed so hard my throat went dry and hurt. My stomach cramped with each gasping breath. I sobbed myself to sleep. My body and mind must have given up the fighting need to rest and shut down. When I woke up, it was late, about 10 p.m. I wrote as much of my update as I could for you guys and hit post. I just sat at the dining table with my head in my hands. My whole life had fallen to shit and I knew it. I thought about so many things and questioned why they were happening to me. I searched social media for updates on Georgia, but there were none. Jamie wasn't super close with his family, but I knew it wasn't long before they'd start to worry. Everything I considered just snowballed in my mind. The loneliness and dealing with the situation was killing me. I decided to do something I usually wouldn't. I went downstairs and I knocked on the door of flat 26. Terry answered. Her perfectly bobbed hair was a little unkempt and out of place. She had huge bags under her eyes and I could smell wine on her breath. "Are you okay, Kat?" She looked concerned. I found it ironic that she looked so disheveled. I had forgotten it was me who came for help. I'm sorry. I know I don't know you. I could barely speak. "Don't worry. Prue called me. She told me everything. I'm sorry about your boyfriend. It's a shame. I never got to meet him." Terry stared back at me with the same expression a mother would. Warm and understanding. "Would you like a cup of tea? Maybe something stronger?" "I'd love a coffee, please," I answered meekly, making way into the living room. Her sofa was comfy, and it reminded me of being back at home with my parents before any of this even started. Terry trotted out to the kitchen, stumbling slightly. I could see the kitchen counter from the sofa, and an empty bottle of wine that accounted for her stumbling. As she boiled the kettle, there was a huge crash from somewhere inside of the flat. I jumped, feeling startled. Terry coughed in a meager attempt to conceal the noise. "Excuse me for just a moment, please," she muttered apprehensively as she walked out of the living room area and into the hallway containing the bedrooms. I heard another crash, giggling, and some inaudible shouting. After a while, things went quiet, and Terry came back into the living room. "Sorry about that. Kids, you know," she announced, brushing off the noises. I'd honestly almost forgotten about Eddie and Ellie. It was late already, and by the resigned expression on Terry's face indicated that this was how all her nights began. I nodded. I couldn't muster up much more of a response. I think she could see that I just needed to sit there. She got up to finish making, and then set the cup of tea in front of me with two digestive biscuits. I hadn't eaten properly in days, and I really needed the sugar. It turned out me and Terry get along quite well. We have similar tastes in movies, music, food, despite the age gap. We spoke for about an hour about random normal stuff. It was nice to get a break from the madness. I got used to the crashing around from the twins. I even laughed a few times. I'd forgotten what that felt like these days. The break didn't last long. The next noise that we heard was louder than the first. It was quickly followed by two small children running into the living room, diving into their mother's arms. I was taken aback for a moment. Eddie and Ellie were dressed in pajamas. They were still the cute children that I had met in the hallway, but something was different. Their brown puppy dog eyes had become deep voids, like what I had imagined when Prue described the window cleaner's true form. And at the end of their fingers were these long, sharp claws protruding from where their nails should be. I didn't have time to recoil in terror at their new looks. Terry clutched them and asked what was wrong. They wailed and buried their voids where their eyes should be into their mother's shoulders. Despite their terrifying exterior, these were still two very scared little kids. It had been a really long day, and I thought my nightmare was over, but honestly, it was only just the beginning. Ellie mumbled into Terry's shoulder in that high-pitched voice kids do when they're scared.
"Mommy, we're so sorry. We didn't mean to let them in. We were just teasing."
"Shh, they're coming," hissed Eddie in the same distressed, high-pitched tone.
"Who's? What have you done?"
Terry asked, the color drained from her face. The kids didn't get a chance to reply. Terry's face turned paler than I thought possible. I looked up, and standing in the living room doorway, there were about 10 people.
all incredibly average looking. They were almost expressionless. They didn't look angry or pleased to see us. They were dressed in nondescriptive clothes, and I imagined trying to describe them to one of those artists that draws pictures for the police. And I genuinely don't even think even one of them had a distinguishing feature. That's why it took me a while to spot her in the crowd, even though she had been glaring at me the entire time. There she was, Natalia.